You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
We have delivered before, we will do it again, is the refrain seen throughout the Congress manifesto released at the party headquarters on Akbar Road, New Delhi, on the 2nd of April. My name is Rakesh Sharma. Welcome to Money Control,
the deep dive podcast series.
Decoding 2019. All you need to know about the Congress manifesto.
Countering the Modi hai to mumkin hai of the BJP, the Congress has come up with its own Hum Nibhayenge. In the foreword to the manifesto, Party President Rahul Gandhi took aim at Prime Minister Modi and his perceived autocratic ways. It is not the Man Ki Baat of one individual, but the collective voice of lakhs of people, he said, referring to the manifesto. Throughout the manifesto and during the press briefing after its release, Rahul Gandhi questioned many times over the narrative of Modi being a doer. Modi hai, to mumkin hai. The Congress's flagship scheme of Nyay, which is the Nyuntam Aay Yojana, which it hopes will be a game changer in the election, has come under attack from the BJP about whether or not it is mumkin to be executed. Addressing that, Gandhi said, and I quote, "It might be impossible for BJP." They said the same thing about MNREGA, but it helped people of the country. It is impossible for the BJP, but it is possible for the Congress, and we will do it, he said. Now, of course, according to the Bharatiya Janata Party, Jawaharlal Nehru is the source of all of India's problems. And perhaps, therefore, the Congress, tongue firmly in cheek, has decided to call the manifesto document India's new tryst with destiny, recalling Nehru's famous speech, the Midnight Hour speech. Calling the manifesto a marriage of wealth and welfare, the Congress issued a blistering attack on Prime Minister Modi, saying him and his party have sown the seed of divisiveness in the country, creating a climate of fear, intimidation and hatred. In fairly dramatic fashion, Gandhi countered the media present at the gathering, saying, and I quote, "You all drill me with questions but are afraid of taking on Modi ji. He has never ever addressed a press conference so far, so why don't you ask him why he is so afraid of talking to the media?" He also said he was ready for an open debate with Narendra Modi on national security. The manifesto quotes Rahul Gandhi as saying, and I quote, "I have never broken a promise that I have made." He continued, and I quote, "I had also said that whatever is going to be in this manifesto has to be truthful. I do not want a single thing in this manifesto that is a lie, because we have been hearing a large number of lies spoken every day by our Prime Minister. There are no lies in this manifesto, as we have had enough lies in the past 5 years," unquote. Now, a little bit about the manifesto itself before we start about the key takeaways from the manifesto. Rajiv Gowda, the convener of the manifesto committee, said the party was given a simple mission statement by Rahul Gandhi. And what was it? To go out and listen to the voices of the people of India. Now, the manifesto is therefore a result of 121 consultations with the public, 53 consultations with experts such as farmers, entrepreneurs, economists, teachers, women's groups, doctors, lawyers, etc., conducted in 60 locations across 24 states and 3 union territories, and with NRI representatives from 12 countries. The Congress Manifesto Committee, led by former Finance Minister P. Chidambaram, includes former State Finance Minister of Punjab, Manpreet Badal, Minister of Parliament from Silchar, Assam, Sushmita Dev, All India Congress Committee's Research Division Head, Rajiv Gowda, who is also the convener of the committee, former Chief Minister of Haryana, Bhupinder Singh Hooda, former Union Ministers, Jairam Ramesh, Salman Khurshid, among others. Now, the manifesto, a new narrative, as they like to call it, attempts to counter the BJP's policies and measures over the past 5 years every step of the way, and presents the voter with a stark choice. The manifesto goes on to ask, and I quote, "Will India be a free and democratic country? And will the Indian people be free from fear, free to live and work and pray and eat and love and marry according to their wishes, free from poverty and free to pursue their ambitions? Or will India be governed by a pernicious ideology that'll trample upon people's rights, institutions, conventions, and the healthy differences that are the essence of a multicultural country?" Unquote. Freedom or fear? Harmony or hatred? Inclusion or exclusion? Results or jumlas? Now, these are the choices the Congress says the electorate has. How much of it you want to believe is, of course, up to you. I am merely the messenger. The manifesto promises that the Congress will restore India's faith in our institutions and the Constitution. In a punch-counter-punch sort of narrative, the manifesto claims that the Congress was responsible for building institutions such as IITs, IIMs, and All India Institute of Medical Sciences, and was responsible for the Green Revolution, the White Revolution, and the IT Revolution. While the BJP, the party said, has been responsible for farm prices at a 10-year low, credit growth at a 20-year low, and unemployment at a 45-year high. claiming that the BJP programs of Digital India, Startup India and Make in India have all been colossal failures. The manifesto declares that an aspirational India has become a desperate India. In keeping with the theme of the new narrative, the manifesto reveal was preceded by an audiovisual representation kicked off by Congress Communication in Charge, Randeep Singh Surjewala. In the video, journalist P. Sainath, environmentalist Sunita Narayan, Lieutenant General Dipendra Singh Hooda, and murdered journalist Gauri Lankesh's sister, filmmaker Kavita Lankesh, addressed the need for a newer order. Now coming to the manifesto itself, according to the party, it prioritizes employment, poverty, farmers' woes, women, and an inclusive society above all else. The manifesto document is divided into six categories. Number one, calm, employment and growth. Dam, an economy that works for all. Number three, Shan, pride in our hard and soft power. Number four, Sushasan, good governance through independent and accountable institutions. Swabhiman, that is self-esteem for the deprived. And Samman, a life of dignity for all. Now, there are five major themes that run through what Gandhi calls a living manifesto. Why living? Because the party claims, and I quote, "We will present a report to the people of India every year on the status of implementation of our manifesto. We will also set up an independent social audit group which will make its own assessment of how and to what extent we have fulfilled our promises," unquote. Now, with all that preamble done about what the manifesto document is all about and how it came about, etc., let's get into, well, the meat of the matter. What are the themes and key takeaways from the manifesto of the Indian National Congress? Bahut kuch promise to kiya hai, kya wo nibha payenge? Let's get into it. Now, like I said earlier, the manifesto tackles five major themes going into the elections. Number one, Nyay. Nyuntam Aay Yojana, which is a minimum income plan. India's poorest will receive money directly in their bank account to ensure they have a minimum monthly income of 12,000 rupees. The plan is to give them 72,000 rupees per annum. And number two, jobs. The Congress promises to fill 22 lakh job vacancies within the government. The party promises regulatory forbearance for micro and small enterprises, meaning they will be exempt from all applicable laws and regulations, other than, of course, the Minimum Wages Act and tax laws, for a period of 3 years, from the 1st of April 2019, or in the case of new businesses, the date of commencement of the business. This, the party hopes, will mean freedom from what they call Inspector Raj. It also wants to do away with angel tax. The party also wants to raise guaranteed days of employment under MGNREGA, that is the Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act, up to 150 days. That's number two theme, that is jobs. Number three, farmer welfare. Karz Mafi to Karz Mukti and a separate Kisan budget are among the chief reforms aimed at the farming sector. If farmers default on loans, the party promises that under its regime, the default will be considered a civil offence and not a criminal offence. Congress also promised to extend farm loan waivers to all states, in keeping with its promises in the states that had assembly elections last year, where it won. Number four, education. The party wants to increase government expenditure on education to 6% of the GDP by financial year 2023-2024. Number five, health. The Congress wants to double government expenditure on healthcare to 3% of the GDP by financial year 2023-24. So Nyay, jobs, farmer welfare, education and health were the five major themes of the manifesto. Let's tackle each of them in detail now. Let's start with the Nyay scheme. Garibi pe var 72,000 is the slogan that announces the flagship scheme of the Congress, which has already attracted much attention on both sides. This minimum income support scheme, that is MISP, aims to provide 72,000 rupees annually to 20% families in the poorest of the poor category, benefiting around 5 crore families or 25 crore people, according to the Congress. The money will be deposited directly into the bank account, preferably of a female member of the family. According to the manifesto, and I quote, "There will be a design phase of 3 months, followed by a pilot and testing phase 6 to 9 months before rollout of the scheme," unquote. With regards to the expenditure, the manifesto goes on to say, and I quote, "The estimated cost will be less than 1% of the GDP in year one and less than 2% of the GDP in year two and thereafter. As the nominal GDP grows and families move out of poverty, the cost will decline as a proportion of the GDP." Unquote. The party, led by Rahul Gandhi, promises to appoint an independent panel of eminent economists, social scientists and statisticians to oversee the design, testing, rollout and implementation of the program. Now, K. Raju, who handles Gandhi's office, told India Today, and I quote, "Though 140 million people were pulled out of poverty between 2004 and 2014, that is the UPA rule, Rahul Gandhi felt that the MGNREGA was not enough. He has been talking of a radical step for the past 2 years, and NYAY is that step." Unquote. According to the report on India Today, Rahul Gandhi, quote, "based on his travel and conversations with the poor for over a decade, came to the assessment that every Indian household needed a minimum income of 12,000 rupees a month. Then, Rahul instructed the Congress research team to calculate the number of households with monthly income less than 12,000 rupees. The team used data from NSSO, that is the National Sample Survey Office, the Central Statistics Office, and the Socioeconomic Caste Census of 2011 to put the number of such households at 50 million. From these data, the team calculated that the average monthly income of these households is around 6,000 rupees, half of Gandhi's promised 12,000. Now, that is the deficit that he hopes to fill with this particular scheme. The India Today report tells us that Gandhi then worked with former Prime Minister Dr. Manmohan Singh, former Finance Minister P. Chidambaram, and former Union Minister Jairam Ramesh to devise resources to transfer the 6,000 rupees deficit to these households. Now, while a universal basic income is not an altogether new idea, in fact, Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers of the United States, developed the idea of UBI as far back as in 1796, its implementation in India might see some problems. And about universal basic income, we have done another podcast to give you an overview of what it is all about. So I recommend that you listen to it when you find the time to. Now, former Reserve Bank of India Governor Raghuram Rajan also spoke of the implementation problems in India and, of course, the fiscal deficit. Speaking to India Today, Dr. Rajan said that MIG, that is Minimum Income Guarantee, if implemented efficiently, could change how things are run. Now, he also cautioned that the current fiscal situation is not conducive for such a high expenditure program. Professor Jayati Ghosh of JNU, also speaking to India Today, said NYAY would be impossible to implement in its current avatar. She said, and I quote, "A pragmatic way to ensure minimum income would be to introduce and combine public health services and the universal right to work, say a 100-day work package for urban areas and for all adults," unquote. Now, if implemented well, UBI or its Indian iteration of NYAY could result in the desired effects of raising millions of people out of poverty. Some form of UBI, although not at the scale of what the Congress proposes, has been implemented in several countries, including France, the United States, Finland, Brazil, Pakistan, Turkey, Mexico, Philippines, etc., etc., and the results have been encouraging. Implementation of a successful UBI plan could also give political dividends to the party responsible for it, as research on UBI in Pakistan, Brazil, and the Philippines has gone on to show. According to Moisa Sarwar, senior researcher at the London-based Overseas Development Institute, who studied these three cash transfer programs in these three countries, and I quote, "the political returns of a widespread pro-poor policy response to politicians in office were significant in consolidating the voter base in each of the three countries and, in the case of Brazil, in expanding it." Unquote. The Bolsa scheme in Brazil has been credited with bringing about a 28% reduction in poverty. Finland's experience with UBI has demonstrated that such schemes had positive impacts on health and stress levels of unemployed youth. Now, India is no stranger to small experiments in UBI herself. As India Today went on to report, and I quote, "two MIG pilot projects were conducted in Madhya Pradesh, covering some 6,000 families between 2010 and 2013. The UNICEF-funded Madhya Pradesh Unconditional Cash Transfer Project showed encouraging results, even though the monthly cash transfer was only 300 rupees or less. The beneficiaries began to save more and use the money wisely, such as on education. This challenges the widely held perception that cash transfers end up being used for questionable purposes, such as liquor." Unquote. Now, the UBI was flagged as an alternative to social welfare programs as early as in the Economic Survey of 2016-17, which had called the idea the shortest path to eliminating poverty, suggesting a transfer of 7,620 rupees per annum to 75% of the country's population. That survey had estimated that the expense of such a model of UBI would be to the tune of 4.9% of India's GDP. Now, in comparison, 5.2% of the GDP in India is spent on the 950 central and centrally sub-sponsored welfare schemes. That survey, that is the economic survey, suggested abolishing or subsuming existing subsidies. But Rahul Gandhi and his party do not want to do away with the existing welfare schemes to make space for Nyay, which means in addition to the 5.2% of the GDP that goes into welfare schemes, the exchequer needs to find additional money to fund the proposed Nyay scheme. Although the Congress insists that the total expenditure would be less than 2% of the GDP, the opposition and several non-partisan commentators have expressed their doubts about the feasibility and sustainability of the scheme. But there may be one way. The Paris-based World Inequality Lab and closer home, sophologist and commentator Yogendra Yadav have suggested a possible resource generator for the Nyay scheme could be taxing the super wealthy. WIL, that is World Inequality Lab, says Nyay can be financed by applying a 2% tax on the total wealth on households with wealth over 2.5 crore rupees per annum. That is the top 0.1% of households, which will yield 2.3 trillion rupees. Now, about the scope of the Nyay scheme itself, while the MGNREGA or the farm loan waivers were aimed primarily at rural populations, the Nyay scheme will not be restricted to rural areas alone. In 2014, just to put poll in perspective, 80% of the BJP's tally of 282 seats came from rural and semi-rural areas. For Congress, that was 32 out of 44, that is rural and semi-rural areas where it won. 5 years later, agrarian distress, high unemployment rates in both rural and urban areas might have resulted in the BJP losing its grip on the Hindi heartland, which is home to a large share of the BJP's tally, like I just said earlier. So will Nyay be that scheme which will lure these voters the Congress way away from the BJP? We'll of course find out on the 23rd of May. So that was the Nyay scheme, one of the flagship schemes proposed by the Congress. Now, the second theme that the Congress was talking about in its manifesto, jobs, jobs, jobs. Our pledge is jobs, 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 says the manifesto. The party has announced it would ensure 34 lakh jobs in the public sector by A, filling all 4 lakh central government vacancies before March 2020, B, getting the state governments to fill their 20 lakh vacancies, and creating an estimated 10 lakh new Seva Mitra positions in every Gram Panchayat and urban local body. So that's 10 plus 20 plus 4, 34. In a bid to absorb young men and women who completed only a few years of schooling, the Congress has proposed to launch two major programs to be implemented through Gram Sabhas and urban local bodies, which it says will create 1 crore jobs. Now, these two programs are the Water Bodies Restoration Mission, which is to repair and restore our water bodies, and number two, regeneration and afforestation of wasteland and degraded land in what it calls a wasteland regeneration mission. So those two, Congress says it will implement and which will also generate 1 crore jobs. Now, the party also claims to increase private sector jobs by rewarding businesses for job creation and employing more women, and requiring businesses with over 100 employees to implement an apprenticeship program. The Congress has also promised to relaunch its flagship scheme of MGNREGA 3.0 by guaranteeing employment for 150 days as against 100 days earlier. It has promised a new Ministry of Industry, Services and Employment in order to underline the link between the growth of the industry and services sectors and rapid creation of jobs. The Congress has also promised that application fees for government examination and government posts will be abolished. The manifesto went on to say, and I quote, "The Congress Party promises regulatory forbearance for micro and small enterprises. They will be exempt from all applicable laws and regulations except the Minimum Wages Act and tax laws for a period of 3 years from the 1st of April 2019 or, in the case of new businesses, the date of commencement of business. This means freedom from Inspector Raj until they stabilize." So, the Congress seems to have a plan for public sector and private sector job creation. Number three, farmer welfare. Karz Mafi to Karz Mukti, like I said earlier. Farmers have had a tough go in the past few years, as we know, sinking prices, loan distress and dwindling workforce interested in farming have all contributed to the sector facing some of its toughest times in recent memory. The Congress accused the NDA government of driving the agriculture sector into a deep crisis through its demonetization and crop insurance schemes. The Karz Mukti that the Congress promises will be through remunerative prices, lower input costs and assured access to institutional credit, according to the manifesto. In order to ensure priority to the issues of the farming sector, the party will present a separate Kisan budget along the lines of the railway budget. A permanent National Commission on Agricultural Development and Planning has also been promised, consisting of farmers, agricultural scientists and agricultural economists to examine and advise the government on how to make agriculture viable, competitive and remunerative. The other big announcement related to the sector was that if farmers are unable to repay the loans, it'll be treated as a civil offence and not a criminal criminal offense. Addressing the media at the release of the manifesto, Rahul Gandhi said, and I quote, Anil Ambanis and Mehul Choksis steal from banks and run away. Farmers are honest. When they take bank loans and fail to repay them, they are thrown in jail. We will not regard farmers' loan defaults as criminal offenses anymore, but we'll see them as a civil offense now, unquote. The party also promises to double the funding in 5 years for teaching, R&D, agriculture-related pure sciences and applied science and technology in the agricultural sector. The party also promises to emulate its actions in Chhattisgarh, Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, where it waived farm loans after winning the state elections there, in all other states of the country as well, should it come to power at the center. How these SOPs will add up, in addition to the welfare schemes and NYAY, is of course anyone's guess. Number four, healthcare. And I'm very pleased to find that this is one of the major themes in the manifesto. Not that this is the first time that it has been introduced so, but there is no amount of emphasis that I can put on how important healthcare is and how it should be one of the most important agendas in any election. Promising to double the country's expenditure on healthcare to 3% of the GDP by 2023-2024, the manifesto went on to further promise to enact the Right to Healthcare Act and guarantee every citizen free diagnostics, outpatient care, free medicines and hospitalization through a network of public hospitals and enlisted private hospitals. Now, while the government's Ayushman Bharat scheme, which is that big insurance scheme that it announced, heavily relies on the participation of private hospitals, which are the majority care providers in the country, the Congress makes a rather distinct departure, going on to claim, and I quote, "We are of the firm belief that the insurance-based model cannot be the preferred model to provide universal health care in our country. Congress promises to vigorously promote and implement the free public hospitals model to provide universal healthcare," unquote. Now, during the press conference, Rahul Gandhi said that the health scheme, that is the Ayushman Bharat scheme introduced by the government, has largely been about taking more money from people and putting it into the pockets of private insurance players. The party has also promised to substantially expand the free dial an ambulance service and put on the road more ambulances in all districts of India. India's current doctor-to-population ratio is 1:1681, and government doctor-to-population is 1:11528. Now, that is drastic. Congress promises to increase the number of doctors, including specialist doctors, significantly by establishing more medical colleges, increasing the capacity of medical colleges, and providing scholarships and loans to medical students. Now, that seems like a fairly myopic way of getting things done, because the only reason why a lot of people who graduate out of medical school do not want to work in government hospitals or in remote areas is A, inconvenience, and B, you're not paid enough. So, and there is also the added problem of government service, the two-year rural service that doctors are expected to do, which is a fantastic thing as far as I'm concerned. I studied medicine, I graduated from medical school, but I will tell you what the other problem is as well. In comparison to their peers who are making about thrice or four times as much money as they are, these jobs, while they are willing to do, are simply not well paid enough. And I don't know if this is another issue that is too granular for any party to consider, but there is opportunity to increase doctor presence even in the most rural parts of the country, if only there were also adequate compensation. Now, in addition to all of these things, the Congress also promises to implement the National Mental Health Policy of 2014 and the Mental Health Care Act of 2017 in letter and spirit. The manifesto said, and I quote, "We will ensure that mental health care professionals are appointed in all public district hospitals and that mental health care services are provided in such hospitals," unquote. This also makes me extremely happy, because this is a quiet public health epidemic. The country is in the grips of a major depression epidemic. As some reports go on to claim, 30-40% of the entire population might be suffering from mild to moderate depression, and A, the patients don't themselves acknowledge it, B, they're not getting enough help for it, C, it is actually affecting the quality of their lives while also affecting their productivity and, in a sense, the economy of the country. So if we don't address these issues and actually enact the policies that have been suggested by experts, we are in trouble of losing more and more young and productive people to suicide. So mental health has been prioritized by the Congress, and I can only welcome it and hope that this promise gets enacted should they come to power. And the fifth biggest theme that they spoke of, education. School education from class 1 to class 12 in public schools shall be compulsory and free, said the manifesto. The party will ensure that schools have adequate infrastructure and qualified teachers. To achieve this, the allocation for education will be doubled to 6% of the GDP by 2023-24, according to the Congress manifesto. Significantly, the manifesto addressed the NEET issue. NEET is, of course, that entrance examination. The manifesto said, and I quote, "The NEET examination is discriminatory against students from certain states. In addition, it interferes with the state government's right to admit students domiciled in the state to medical colleges in that state. Hence, we will take measures to dispense with the NEET examination and substitute it with a state-level examination of equivalent standard approved by the competent authority for admission to medical colleges in that state. Unquote. One of the most vociferous demands of the opposition in Tamil Nadu, by the way, is the scrapping of NEET. Not a coincidence that Congress's ally DMK also promised the abolition of NEET in its manifesto. So there we have it, the five major themes that the Congress manifesto tackled: education, healthcare, farmer welfare, Karz Maafi to Karz Mukti, jobs, 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 and the Nyay scheme.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
Decoding 2019. All you need to know about the Congress manifesto.
Now, those were the five major takeaways from the Congress manifesto. Hum nibhayenge is what they're claiming. In another podcast, I will attempt to tackle some of the other key takeaways from that manifesto, because this has already gotten too long and we don't want to trouble you too much. So this was part one of the Congress manifesto. Join me in part two, where we discuss some other things, some other essential things like 33% reservation for women in Lok Sabha. What about RBI autonomy? How about GST? What about sedition laws? And what about Armed Forces Special Powers Act? That is AFSPA. What does the Congress have to say about all of these things? We'll find out on part two of the Congress manifesto. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast. And you have been listening to Money Control.